Good morning. This is Wendy Bauer reading to you today from the Decatur Herald and Review. It is August 3rd, 2020, and we'll begin on the front page with the article headlined, Nature Lesson, Eagle Scout Candidate Tackles Erosion at Illinois Raptor Center. Valerie Wells writes from Decatur, digging a ditch in the hot sun is hard work, but Reed McNeil is not afraid of hard work. He is building an anti-erosion drainage system at Illinois Raptor Center for his Eagle Scout project. Reed, 17, a member of Troop 43 in Mount Zion, said he never wanted to do a typical project. They all seem to be build a platform. I wanted to do something outside, he said. Assistant Scoutmaster Tim Lee brought up that Jacques Nuzzo, program director, was looking for somebody to do this. We came out here and looked around, and this is probably one of the best ideas I've had, Reed said. Nuzzo, who was himself a Boy Scout, though not an Eagle, can point to several projects on the Raptor Center's property that have been Eagle projects. He used to work for the Boy Scouts, and part of his job was to review Eagle projects and applications to make sure the scout in question had fulfilled all the requirements. When an Eagle Scout candidate completes his project at the Illinois Raptor Center, Nuzzo will attend the ceremony and bring an actual eagle along as a thank you. Nothing is level on this property, Nuzzo said with a chuckle, waving his hand to indicate the many hilly areas around the city center's office, Muse, Superflight, and hospital building. Because of that, when it rains, the water pools and causes inconvenience and mud around the Muse, where the resident birds live. The water doesn't get into the Muse themselves, but volunteers don't want to slog through the mud to take care of the birds, he said. And the standing water turns to ice in winter. It was starting to cause runoff and erosion problems, which is why Reed's help was so welcome. When the center built the Muse, thanks to assistance from Ameren, Illinois, the location was chosen directly behind the house that serves as the center's office and education center. To one side of the Muse is the Superflight, where large birds learn to fly again and build up their strength after injury or illness. In building the Superflight, there were materials left over. 13 24-foot 6x6 poles that weigh about 300 pounds each. He put those back for a future project, and Reed is using them for the anti-erosion project. All I know is I'm very, very happy with the project, mainly because I'm not doing the work, Nuzzo said. It's a hard project. Eventually, he said, he'd like to build an ornamental pond in the U-shaped area that is surrounded by the Muse, and it would serve as enrichment for the birds, who enjoy watching deer and other birds who visit the area. One of the funniest things I ever saw in my life was a female turkey with her poults, parading them in front of the Muse, almost as if she was saying, "Kids, this is a bald eagle. And this is a great horned owl, which will kill you." Every project leads to another one, Nuzzo said, and the center is constantly being upgraded and improved as funds allow. Jacques left almost the entire project up to us, Reed said. I've put in some hours of research looking at different designs for retaining walls, different ways they can be built, and how they can be effective. The original ones were just boards stacked on top of one another, and there was no drainage. We are hoping to reinforce the original retaining wall, as well as make a wall that should last quite a few years and not need to be repaired for a while. He said he has found it fun to do the project and doesn't mind the heat, even though it has taken longer than he anticipated. He's an athlete at Mount Zion High School and normally would be spending at least half of every day at preseason practices, but because of restrictions caused by COVID-19, his time is free to devote to this project. Reed's father, Don, has experience with construction and engineering and helped plan the project. He was looking for nature-type projects, McNeil said. He likes to be outdoors and do physical labor, and I thought, well, it's a bigger project, but I thought it was good. And one of the photographs accompanying the article is a picture of Reed McNeil. It's captioned that Reed McNeil takes on the task of upgrading the retention wall on Tuesday at the Illinois Raptor Center in Decatur as his Eagle Scout project. The upgraded retention wall will lead to new possible projects for the Raptor Center in its conservation and enrichment efforts. And continuing on the front page, talks on relief package stalled. This is from Washington. As millions of Americans drifted toward financial crisis, the two parties remained deadlocked after weekend talks on another round of economic relief intended to ease the burden of job losses from the worsening coronavirus outbreak. Administration officials and Democratic congressional leaders spent hours Saturday huddled in the Capitol suite of Speaker Nancy Pelosi, Democrat from San Francisco, without reaching a deal on extending enhanced unemployment benefits. That relief expired Friday, jeopardizing many families' ability to pay for rent and food while they wait for opportunities to return to work. Treasury Secretary Steven T. Mnuchin said he was concerned about the legislation's potentially multi-trillion dollar price tag. There's obviously a need to support workers, support the economy, Mnuchin told This Week on ABC News. But he added, on the other hand, we have to be careful about not piling on enormous amounts of debt for future generations. Pelosi, who appeared on the program shortly before Mnuchin, said Democrats didn't want to accept anything less than the $600 per week enhanced unemployment benefit that began earlier this year. She blamed the impasse on Republicans struggling to reach an agreement among themselves. We are unified in our support for the $600, she said. They are in disarray. Although Pelosi said some progress was made Saturday, she did not share a timeline for reaching an agreement. Senate Republican leaders were absent from the meeting, deferring to the administration after President Donald Trump called their proposal, which included only $200 for enhanced unemployment benefits, sort of semi-irrelevant during a news conference last week. Meanwhile, across the country, parents were evaluating their options as schools were poised to reopen this week. In Georgia, John Barrett plans to keep his daughter home from elementary school this year in suburban Atlanta, but he wishes she were going. Molly Ball is sending her teenage sons to school in the same district on Monday, but not without feelings of regret. As the academic year begins in many places across the country, parents are faced with a difficult choice of whether to send their children to school or keep them home for remote learning because of the coronavirus pandemic. Many are unhappy with either option. I definitely think it's healthy for a child to go back to school, said Ball, who believes her sons, William and Henry, both at River Ridge High School in Georgia's Cherokee County District, suffered through enough instability in the spring. At the same time, I wish they weren't going back to school right now. It's very scary. Offering parents choices eases some of the problems facing schools. If some students stay home, that creates more space in buildings and on buses. But the number of families with a choice has dwindled as the virus's spread has prompted school districts to scrap in-person classes, at least to start the academic year, in cities including Los Angeles, Philadelphia, and Washington, as well as parts of the South and Midwest where school is starting this week. Many districts that don't begin instruction until after Labor Day are warily tracking the virus and weighing concerns of educators and parents as they consider plans including hybrid approaches with in-person learning of at least a few days a week. Parents are not the only ones who are struggling. Districts that offer two modes of instruction create new challenges for teachers as well, especially those in smaller districts who are being asked to educate students in person and online at the same time. The key is going to be the complexity, how to handle it, said Alan Pratt, executive director of the National Rural Education Association. Is it going to be standards driven? What students need to move to the next grade level? Is it going to be equal face-to-face or better than face-to-face? And moving to the local and state page, from Shelbyville, the Shelby County Health Department on Sunday reported 4 new positive cases of coronavirus. They were identified as a 21-year-old male, a 52-year-old male, a 72-year-old female, and a 58-year-old female. 3 of these cases are asymptomatic, and 1 is experiencing mild symptoms, a news release said. The 4 new cases bring the county's total to 59. Symptoms for COVID-19 usually appear 2 to 14 days after initial exposure to the disease. Symptoms include fever, cough, and shortness of breath. The health department says social distancing, thoroughly washing hands, and not touching your face with unwashed hands are the best ways to prevent the spread of coronavirus disease. And next, Decatur Council to discuss new fire stations, minority business enterprise ordinance revisions. The Decatur City Council is expected to take action related to 2 new fire stations and adopt updates to the Minority Business Enterprise Ordinance when it meets Monday in regular session. The council meets at 5:30 p.m. in the Decatur Civic Center. The council will consider resolution authorizing the purchase of property at 3530 East Chestnut Avenue to be used as the new home of Fire Station Number 7. The sale price is $82,000. The current station is a shared facility on the grounds of the Decatur Airport, which city staff described in their memo to the council as being in significant need of repairs. The memo also states the new location would provide a better base from which to serve increasing development east of Lake Decatur and south of US 36 without being hindered by the railroad tracks that run along the highway. The council is also expected to enter into a $2,959,000 contract with Bloomington-based Felmley Dickerson Company for the construction of a new fire station number 3, which will move a couple blocks north from its current location at 1308 West Eldorado Street to Fairview Plaza. As part of the contract, it was noted that Felmley Dickerson will employ the services of at least 2 minority contractors that will provide a minimum of 18% of the contracted work. These 2 projects and the recently opened fire station number 5 along Mound Road are part of an $8.5 million fire station upgrade initiative that also includes renovations to 4 existing stations. The project is being funded through the issuance of bonds. The council also will consider revisions to its existing Minority Business Enterprise, MBE, ordinance. The changes, the first in more than 5 years, were discussed at the council's July 13th study session and also includes additional recommendations from members of the African American community. Among the added recommendations from community members was clearer language in the ordinance, generally associated with public works projects, of incentives for procuring equipment, supplies, and services from MBEs. Minority business enterprises are defined as those companies owned 51% or more by minority persons, where a majority of the board and leadership of the company are minority persons. The changes discussed during the study session include awarding contractors who surpass 20% MBE participation by aggregate dollar value to receive a 2% bonus, and provide that qualified MBEs bidding on city procurement contracts can be awarded contracts if they provide goods, services, construction work, equipment, and supplies purchased by the city, even without being the lowest qualified bidder, if they are within 2% of the low bid. The ordinance also requires that the MBEs must have their offices located in one of 17 central Illinois counties: Macon, DeWitt, Sangamon, Piatt, Moultrie, Logan, Christian, Tazewell, Peoria, Woodford, McLean, Champaign, Menard, Mason, Vermilion, Morgan, and Shelby. The council also will consider adding to current licenses and alcoholic liquor ordinances restrictions on local businesses, included in an emergency declaration issued last week by Mayor Julie Moore Wolf, intended to prevent the spread of coronavirus. And next, Pena Restaurant closes after two workers test positive for COVID. A Pena fast food restaurant closed at 8 p.m. Saturday because two workers tested positive for COVID-19, according to the health department. The McDonald's is at 1 South Poplar Street, the Christian Montgomery County Health Department said in a statement. Upon notification of the positive cases within the facility, they were in direct contact with the local health department and Christmont EMA. Additional contact tracing is being completed now by the Christian County Health Department, the statement said. And Tony Reed writes from Decatur. Decatur, Macon County law enforcement seek to close racial gap in officers. Patrick Charles is a bright Decatur 18-year-old looking at a future career in the U.S. military. His potential employment choice stands as yet more bad news for the Decatur Police Department and the Macon County Sheriff's Office. Their efforts to find talented people of color to put on the blue and brown uniforms of their respective law enforcement agencies is, in police radio speak, encountering a solid 1085, meaning a serious delay. "I've thought about it," said Charles when talking of a police career, "but I just don't have a passion for doing that." He's far from alone, even as a clamor of voices rises in street protests nationwide, calling for police departments to more closely resemble the communities they are tasked with serving and protecting. The repeated instances of clashes between white officers and black suspects, as in the killing in Minnesota of George Floyd when he was pinned by his neck during an arrest, highlights the need, critics say, for police more in sympathy with those they police. The Decatur Police Department has 145 sworn officers, of whom five are black, two are Hispanic descent, and three of mixed race. The Macon County Sheriff's Office has 33 deputies, of whom just one is black and one Hispanic. Of the 13 command staff, there is one African American, but he also happens to be in the top job, Sheriff Tony Brown. Contrast those numbers with the U.S. Census data on the racial makeup of the citizens of Decatur and Macon County. In Decatur, in 2019, the population stood at 70,746, and the number of those identifying as black or African American was 20.5%. In Macon County as a whole, out of a total population of 104,000, nearly 18% identified as black or African American. That leaves law enforcement at the county and city levels with a very long hill to climb, before its ethnicity forms a more perfect union with those on behalf of whom the laws are being enforced. Charles, meanwhile, remains more attracted to the fast-paced challenges of military life and the prospect of the GI Bill fueling his ultimate career aims somewhere in the biology, general science, psychology field. But the young man about to go into his senior year at Decatur's MacArthur High School has been giving the whole issue of policing in his homeland a lot of thought. Charles believes there are some bad officers, and many good ones, white and otherwise, who are trying to do their best in often difficult circumstances. But he warns against looking to hire black people and other minorities simply because of how it looks to critical eyes peering in from the outside. That kind of attitude just kind of shows how America is, how it's all about how something appears, he said. But it should not be about getting more minorities just to have more minorities. It should be about getting more people with different ideas and different opinions from different backgrounds. That way, we have a more inclusive, understanding police force. Some black leaders do believe, however, that it would at least be helpful and calming to have more of those differing viewpoints and ideas represented by people of color. Janelle Norman, Decatur NAACP president, isn't holding her breath waiting for that to happen, however. Given our current fractured national sense of identity and racial understanding, she experiences no great surprise that police chiefs face an uphill battle trying to recruit from black families. In the case of Decatur Police and the Macon County Sheriff's Office, she does not believe they are tainted by allegations of indifference or out-and-out hostility that have been leveled against some other police departments, usually to be found in bigger cities. But Norman says those bad vibes flow into black living rooms from wall-to-wall media coverage of the latest white-on-black policing tragedies, and resentment builds and trickles down through generations, souring attitudes to law enforcement. When I was a child many years ago, and you asked kids, especially boys, what they wanted to be when they grew up, it was always cop, and all the kids played cops and robbers, she said. They don't want to play that anymore. Decatur Police Chief Jim Goetz gets high praise from Norman for his efforts to work with the black community in Decatur to diffuse any troubled situations in law enforcement when they arise. Goetz, for his part, said he tries to maintain a policy of availability and openness and a zero tolerance for officers who don't treat citizens of any color with respect. But none of that is helping him hunt up many recruits of any color. Offering well-paid jobs with good benefits isn't enough to overcome what he sees as a constant flood of negative publicity about police work. Well, overall, applications are down among all races, he said. We started seeing that trend after the Ferguson issue. Nights of sustained rioting broke out in Ferguson, Missouri, in the wake of police there shooting dead a black man, 18-year-old Michael Brown, in 2014. We were already struggling to get applications from the black community, and that whole situation, and everything since, has just added to it, said Goetz. The police chief said a typical average might see that out of 100 new recruit applications, just 4 will be from African Americans. The attrition rate of applicants who don't make it through the screening process remains the same among whites and blacks, Goetz added. But the effect is much more telling when you only have a handful of black candidate applications to begin with. The job itself doesn't help much either when it comes to trying to sell the joys of police work. It's a 24-hour service, working holidays and weekends, and one that frequently exposes you to danger and people who aren't pleased to see you. I've seen black officers called traitors and things like that just because they were wearing a uniform, added Goetz. But it's going to need black young men and women willing to change that culture and that mindset instead of stepping away from it. One case in point was an arrest in June when Decatur police chased a fleeing suspect into a house and quickly found themselves confronted by an angry crowd hurling insults. One of the police officers on hand to talk to people and help calm things down was Brown, the sheriff, whose skin color matched many of those doing the yelling. He's also a well-known figure who makes it a point to attend community events and activities even when he is not being a law enforcement figure. That, however, doesn't make it any easier to find black recruits for the sheriff's office, he said. And throw in a major budget crunch created by the tax and revenue ravages of the colorblind COVID-19 virus, and the prospects of finding the resources and time to concentrate on recruiting, and the money to pay those recruits, are far from bright. But whatever the ethnic makeup of law enforcement in Decatur and Macon County, Brown believes that thanks to his own and community outreach efforts by Goetz, citizen-police relations are a lot better here than in many towns that saw widespread violence in the wake of the Floyd killing and other deaths. Brown believes he can build on those relations and, when the money situation gets better, make some serious efforts to convince minority candidates they've got a future in the sheriff's office. The trick, in the meantime, is hanging on to his own job after he won the Macon County Sheriff's race in 2018 by just one vote, 19,655 to Lieutenant Jim Root's total of 19,654. A painstaking and court-ordered hand recount was completed recently, and the battle to decide whether he keeps his job will be decided with a bunch of contested ballots left to a judge to try and figure out whom they were cast for. And while Brown remains confident, he's not going to pretend it isn't stressful. And for African Americans watching his tenure and seeing the 30-year department veteran under challenge from the moment he laid claim to the top job, Brown doesn't think the optics look great. You do have some individuals who say, "I am going through what I am going through because of the way I look," said Brown. "And I'm not going to sugarcoat it. I do believe there are elements of that with some people." Brown says he is buoyed by a strong faith and a natural sense of optimism that leaves him believing good outcomes are worth fighting for. "Do I believe we will end up with a sheriff's office that looks more like the racial makeup of Macon County?" said Brown. "Well, I think it's our duty to try, to do our due diligence, and to try real hard." "Trying real hard," said community activist Jacob Jenkins, "should mean having cops live in the areas they police. Recent efforts by the city of Decatur to impose a residency rule for new hires met with fierce resistance from the Decatur Police Benevolent and Protective Association, the Decatur Police Union. But while policemen and women may want to keep their families safely at arm's length, that is not the way to win hearts and minds and encourage young black men and women to aspire to color themselves in blue," Jenkins believes. "Not being able to see policemen in our communities, not being able to see them off duty in the community, and only being able to see them when they show up to arrest suspects or enforce the laws, it just gives a very negative impression," said Jenkins. And this ends our first half hour of the Decatur Herald and Review for August 3rd, 2020. We will take a short break now and return with the second half hour shortly. Please stay tuned.